You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. This is the Yiddish Hour, but we're going Ladino right now.
Te parió y te quitó al mundo, corazón ella no te dio para amar segundo, corazón ella no te dio para te parió y te quitó al mundo, corazón ella no te dio.
A little taste here from Frank Varon from Sephardic Bikur Cholim in Seattle. It's a delightful album, a wonderful voice, a majestic voice, and it was brought down here to the station this morning by Rabbi Shlomo Truzman of Ahavat Ahim, the only Sephardic congregation in Oregon. And Rabbi Truzman has consented to join us today to talk a little bit about an event you're having there today at the Kehillah.
Right. Beginning today, this morning, at 1 p.m. And this is open to the entire Jewish community of Portland.
And we're calling it what? It's a Sephardic
dedication. The dedication of a Sephardic Torah.
Why is this important to a community? For those of in our listening audience who aren't familiar, what is the significance of dedicating a Sefer Torah?
Well, like anything else, you know, the Jewish people are very much into Jewish laws, into the religion, and therefore what we need is to ensure that each and every one of us have the book for reference. When I first arrived here about 2.5 years ago, I realized that some of the Sefer Torah we had in our ark need to be, some of the letters were missing and so on and so forth. So at the time, I discussed with the board that we were in need of a new, brand new Sefer Torah that would last us for a long time.
Let me clarify for the listening audience. When we say Sefer Torah, we're referring to the scroll, the hand-lettered scroll that has the first five books of the Hebrew Bible, the what we call the five books of Moses.
The planning and of the purchase of this Sefer Torah actually goes back about 2 years, and it has taken us this long to actually bring it all together, and thanks to, of course, to the generosity of Jerry and Bani Sadis that spearheaded this project, that we came up with the necessary money to purchase the scroll. And of course, like everything else, the dedication will take place today. We're all very thrilled, very excited about the ceremony, which is first at Ahavat Achim. And as such, we wish to share it with everybody.
Now, the scroll itself, how long does it take somebody to write one of these?
It could take anything from 9 months to a year. And certainly, you have to have a competent scribe that dedicates his life to the writing of Sefer Torah. Fortunately for us, we were able to find a Sefer Torah that was ready, and as such, we didn't hesitate to buy it. And just not only that, it's a beautiful Sefer Torah. But we also bought it for the right price. Don't ask me how much, please.
No. Where did it come from? Does this come from New York or Jerusalem or Istanbul or where?
This Sefer Torah was written in Jerusalem,
in
the city of gold.
Now, I think many of our people in our listening audience understand a little bit about the traditions of Sephardic Jews, but for those who don't, how would you describe the difference between the Sephardic tradition and what most people would know, the Yiddish tradition, Eastern European Ashkenazi tradition?
In regards to any particular?
Just the overall feeling, either the feeling or philosophically, spiritually, in terms of liturgy, anything that, if people walked into Ahavat Achim during a service, what differences might they spot?
Well, the first difference that would be spotted, of course, will be the cantorial aspects of the liturgy, which, they have an oriental, ours has an oriental flavor to it, whereas the Ashkenazic liturgy has a Eastern European accent to it. And that's the difference. There are some other slight differences that we have established throughout the ages. Remember that we were kept apart for thousands of years, and as such, we each develop his custom, their own custom. And you know what happens when Jewish people, accept a custom, to them becomes a tradition and a law, and therefore it's very difficult to let go of them. We promise that the experience today at Ahavat Achim will be a delightful one for both Sephardim and Ashkenazim, because all in all, we are one people, one community. And as such, we look forward to having each and every one of you come and share with us.
Now, the event is called, it's the dedication of the Sephardic Sefer Torah. It's at Ahavat Achim, which is 3225 Barber. It's the beehive-shaped building that's just south of the Y on Barber Boulevard, heading south out of downtown. It starts at 1:00. What kind of program will you have? It's a program in procession, and I'm thinking 95 degrees, so I hope that the program is longer than the procession.
Yeah, you better think 100 degrees, by the way. That's the latest I've heard.
From Morocco. You're used to this.
This is my kind of weather. I'm definitely at home. Most certainly we will begin at 1:00. Just for all of you concerned about this weather, yes, our sanctuary will be air-conditioned, and there'll be plenty of water available. We shall do the ceremonial part, which entails reading a few of the Psalms. Then there'll be a couple of speeches, followed by the processional that is inside the synagogue seven times around, and then the we shall leave the synagogue and parade the synagogue all through Barber and then back to the synagogue. And then, of course, following that, everyone is invited to a reception.
So today, 1 o'clock, 3225 Southwest Barber. And that's at Congregation Ahavat Ahim. Parking is a problem. Where should people park?
Well, there are a number of places. We already made provisions for all. That is in the synagogue and, of course, outside the synagogue. But a couple of so, a block or so away, they are available parking. And we believe we will be able to actually accommodate everyone.
Well, thank you so much for coming down here to the show today. It's been a real pleasure having you here. I know you're busy, so I'm not going to keep you here any longer than you have to. Thanks so much for sharing your busy day with us. Ahavat Ahim today, Sephardic Sefer Torah dedication, 1 o'clock, 3225 Barber. We'll listen to a little bit more Ladino music. This is the music of the Jews of the Mediterranean, the Sephardic Jews. And this is from Judy Frankel's album, Silver and Gold. We'll hear a song called The Boca del Dio. And this, the translation says here, from the mouth of God, all Jews are blessed. There's none as holy as our God, none as pious as Moshe ben Amram, none so honored as our law, none so humble as the people of Israel.
Todos los judíos, no hay santo como Adonai, y no piadoso como Ben Amram, y no hay cuadrada como nuestra ley, y no hay prenismo como Israel. Mi piel, mi piel, me vora con Israel, de boca del Dios, de boca del Dios, somos bendichos todos los judíos. Hey.
Listening to the Yiddish Hour, but we haven't played anything Yiddish. This has been Ladino music, the music of the Sephardic Jews of the Mediterranean. And that in particular was David Saltiel from his album Jewish Spanish Songs of Thessaloniki. And that was a tune called The First Day of the Week. May God, with all his grace, send us to a good. May we not see any evil or agony for us and all of Israel. May a good week come to us. We came out to receive her, so God may let us live, for us and all of Israel. Blessed may be the highest that gave us this honored day. Every Shabbat will be better for us and all of Israel. Let us all unite, let us bless his name, and from him we shall ask the blessing of Israel. You, the merciful Father, lead us to the Ne'aman, to the Eternal, so it can be a good sign for us and all of Israel. Michael, the head of Israel, Eliyahu and Gavriel, let them come with the Savior to save Israel. David Saltiel from his album Jewish Spanish Voices of Thessaloniki. One more klezmer tune here now from Steve Greenman from his album Stempanew's Dream. This is a Terkischer what? It's a Terkischer something. It's a Terkischer Freilichs. have a message for you that comes to us from KBOO.
The KBOO Youth Collective will bring you the Underground Wednesday, June 28th from 6 to 7 p.m. Our theme this month is body modification and body image. We'll have stories about first tattoos, steroid use, fad diets, and more. We'll also feature youth poems from Cleveland High School and the band King. 2 9-year-olds associated with the Rock and Roll Camp for Girls. That's Wednesday, June 28th from 6 to 7 p.m. here on your KBOO 90.7 FM.
You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. This is the Yiddish Hour. And I'd like to let you know about something happening here in Portland. Portland's newest kosher restaurant, the Doubletree at Lloyd Center, has dinners, kosher dinners, prepared under the supervision of Rabbi Wilhelm every month, the last Sunday evening of the month. Reva and I went last month, and it was pretty darn good. This month, today, is the last Sunday of June, so it's happening today from 5:30 to 8:30. You should call for reservations. It's 503-331-4923, 1000 Northeast Multnomah Street. It's the Red Lion at Lloyd's, or the Doubletree. It's a mantra I have to keep repeating at Lloyd Center. We went last month. They had Chinese food. This month they are touting Italian food, so we'll see what it is. I found it, you know, it's pretty good. It's the very, very best kosher meal you're going to find in a restaurant in Portland, Oregon, and I can guarantee you that. Any rate, some of you may already be familiar with a gentleman named German Goldenstein. German Goldenstein is, it's hard to characterize him simply because he meant so much to so many of us. He was the fulcrum for the Klezmer revival for the last 12 years. He's a guy that came from Mogilev Podolsk, a town in the Ukraine just across the border from Moldova where he grew up. And he came with a collection of 800 tunes and taught and shared many of them with people who've gone to Klezmer camps around North America and around the world. I was privileged to record one of his tunes on my last album, and he's gone. He left us several weeks ago, just a week and a half ago, and it's something that hits us all, really. So what I'd like to do is share a recording that our good friend Marty Morgenbesser has brought down to the studio. This is an album. It's German Goldenstein's first album. It was recorded last December, and I can only call it, you know, providential, min hashamayim, what do you want? It's really miraculous. A young guy named Alex Kantorovich corralled German Goldenstein and several of the younger generation of Klezmer musicians into a room at a week-long music retreat and managed to lay down an album there. And it's called A Living Tradition. This album came out weeks before German died fishing. So this is German Goldenstein, and this is Garofitsa. It's one of my favorite tracks on the album. Herman Goldenstein. This is a brand new album, and you know, if there's a glimmer of good news in here, it's that German lived long enough to hear it before he died. That's not always the case. We've got way too many reports of people having posthumous accomplishments, this, that, and the other. They didn't get to hear it, or the producer dawdled or what have you, and that's not the case here. Alex Kantarovich is a young guy. I think he's still in his 20s. He's very highly regarded clarinetist on the klezmer scene coming up these days. He's also a grad student at Columbia in some abstract area of mathematics. Brilliant, brilliant. Russian-born guy, which is a real plus here because German himself came over from the old Soviet Union. And so Alex, in setting this thing up, was able to talk to German in German's own language. I'd like to throw some credit where credit is due. I wouldn't have known about German Goldenstein or about Klez Canada without my good friend Marty Morgenbesser, local accordionist who had gone there for a couple of summer sessions, came back and said, Yankel, you gotta go. And unfortunately, I've only been able to go once, but it was on Marty's say-so, and that's where I first met German, and that's where I was first introduced to not only his repertoire and not only his style of playing, but his extraordinary personality. Marty Morgenbesser is here with us in the studio. Marty studied with German for a number of years. Good morning,
yeah,
Marty.
Good morning, Jack. And you would have found out eventually, but maybe you just found out a little bit earlier. But yeah, I did have the pleasure of going to some of German Goldenstein's music workshops at Klez Canada in Quebec. And in fact, if you go to Klez Canada, K-L-E-Z-K-A-N-A-D-A, Canada
all
with
K's,
a K.
All K's.
Except for the .com. That's a C. KlezCanada.com. They have
.org.
.com. It works. It also works .org.
Try them both.
And I think they have .ca as well.
Good.
They've reserved all the names. But in any case, they have a little slideshow and eulogy that Michael Alpert wrote. And Michael Alpert, of course, is a major musician in the klezmer scene today. And he helped bring German and his music to the attention of the Jewish community, the klezmer music community, and also the Russian and former Soviet community in New York and beyond, through the Nashi Traditsi, our tradition, work that he was doing. But German was born in Romania in a town called Otacha.
O-T-A-C-I. We get bonus points for pronouncing it right.
Well, Yankel's Romanian pronunciation is better than mine. But in any case, he was born, I think, in 1934, and he was orphaned during the Holocaust, ended up in a Romanian orphanage with some of his brothers, and then was transferred to, I guess, a Soviet orphanage in Ukraine. And while he was there, I think when he was about 7 years old, a director of a music school, a military music school, came looking for young recruits who they were training and grooming to be members of the Red Army Band. And so he was looking for youngsters with musical talent, and he found German and one of his brothers. And, of course, they were very pleased to get out of that orphanage. And he ended up in the Red Army Band. And also, and he was in the Red Army Band, I guess, through the 50s. And then afterwards, he worked as a machinist and technical writer, by the way. Yankel, another example of a klezmer clarinet player who also earns his living from technical writing.
It goes hand in hand, and yeah. I can't explain exactly how.
Yeah, there's also our good friend Jim Cohen on the East Coast who does the same thing, too. It seems to be a correlative skill. But in any case, German, when he came to this country in 1994, he had in Europe also been playing lots of community events and weddings and Jewish, Ukrainian, Moldovan, and he brought with him a collection of tunes. He said he could learn tunes easily, but then he couldn't recall the different ones, and so he would write down the melodies in a book, and some estimate he brought over as many as 800 tunes, as some say 1,000, but certainly a very large number by anyone's reckoning. And
his tune books are available for sale from various places, aren't they?
Various places. I think if you go to klezcanada.com or .org.
Or .ca.
Yeah. Also, the CD you can get from cdbaby.com. If you go there, look up Goldenstein, G-O-L-D-E-N-S-H-T-E-Y-N.
We're going to be spelling that again for you in the show, but just in case you've got a pencil, G-O-L-D-E-N. S-H-T-E-Y-N, just like it sounds.
And if you go to cdbaby.com, they're a good local company here in Portland, and they just keep a very small cut just to cover their costs and make a living. Most of the proceeds, the vast majority of the CD sale proceeds, would go to Goldenstein's immigrant family in Brooklyn, so would definitely help them out. But you're going to love this music. I know Jack's going to play some more of it. In fact, I'm going to stop talking for a bit and let him put some music on.
All right, you're listening to the Yiddish Hour on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. I'm fortunate to be sitting here with Marty Morgenbesser, and we are talking about our dear friend German Goldenstein, Olive Shalom. This is from his recently released album. It's called A Jocul Rezeshilor. I don't speak Romanian. I have no idea what kind of a joc this is, but enjoy it. German Goldenstein from his album A Living Tradition. This is just out. It's available from CD Baby. German Goldenstein came over 12 years ago, and Marty Morgenbesser and I are reminiscing a little bit about his life in this country and also his contribution to the world klezmer scene. One thing that's, I think, worth bearing in mind is how German Goldenstein got to come here and why he came here. He had been working, as Marty says, as a machinist and tech writer and doing other things in his town of Mogilev-Podolsk in the Ukraine. And the way I understand it, his brother was working over there as a dentist, and I think somebody went into his brother's office and murdered him for the gold in the office. That's what I've heard.
Something like that. And things were pretty bad there from what I heard from him, back, I think in 93, there was a civil war in Moldova that we really didn't hear too much about over here. But, when the Soviet Union collapsed, things got kind of ugly there. I don't know that they were that beautiful before, but in spite of the conditions, they sure did produce some beautiful music.
So I guess let me ask a question for, I mean, I sort of know the answer, but I'm still, you know, I struggle with it too. Here's a guy who was just 71 years old, although as you say, it's 71 Soviet years, so that's a lot. But he's an older clarinetist, not the oldest of the bunch by any means. Why is he special?
Well, when after he got out of the Red Army Band.
Well, that's special enough. He survived the Red Army Band.
That also. And, of course, that informed his music as well. And he plays some, in fact, I think on the CD there's this one Russian tune, which maybe we'll play as well. But what he did was he traveled around with various bands throughout the region. And played music at weddings, at all sorts of community celebrations for what remained of the Jewish community after the Holocaust, and also for other ethnic communities, for Moldovans, for Romanians, for Ukrainians. And there may have been some Roma, some Gypsy there as well, and you can hear in some of his tunes a little bit of Roma influence. But one of the things that's very interesting is that region was really, I don't know if I'd use the term melting pot, but there were so many different ethnicities there, and I've mentioned some of them, and they all had their musical traditions, and those musical traditions blended and informed each other, much like I know Michael Alpert has compared it to the border music, the Norteño or Tex-Mex border music, in which you could hear influences of Spanish music, Mexican, Indio music, and of course the Central and Eastern European that came over to Mexico. You hear influences of Czech and German music. And similarly, in that particular part of Moldova, there were all these different influences swirling about. And I remember I was in one of German's workshops, and he taught us a tune, and it was a very interesting tune. And I asked him, now, would you play this at a Moldovan celebration, at a Ukrainian, a Romanian, a Jewish? He said, yeah. And I said, well, what kind of tune is it? Is it Moldovan? Is it Jewish? Is it Romanian? Is it Ukrainian? Is it Roma, Gypsy? And he just looked at me and he nodded his head and said, yes. And they, you know, good tunes get around, and they played with each other. There's this community of musicians. And of course, when German played it, whether it was a tune that originally came from the Jewish tradition or whether it came from neighboring communities, from a lot of it, of course, is influenced by Romanian music. But he played it with a Jewish sensibility and a Jewish ear, and it has a Jewish accent to it. But I don't think they made those distinctions that maybe the ethnomusicologists make of what kind of tune it was. It was music. It was for celebration and enjoyment.
Yeah, I think that you certainly within the grand panoply of East European musics, it's hard to characterize Germans as one or another, but within the world of Jewish music, and I think this is what's remarkable, you know, to our ears, within the world of Jewish music, this is one of the very few performance styles that we get that's really East European today. If you listen to some of the archival stuff that was recorded 80, 90 years ago, you hear a form of music, you know, the Belfort Orchestra and some of the other early groups that recorded in Europe before the First War or even afterwards, the Ukrainian State Ensemble. There is an Eastern European aesthetic that's not the same as what you found in the New York recording studios. It's not the same as what you found in the LA or LA studio bands later in the century. It's something very different. It's older. There's a fluidity to the intonation. There's a fluidity to the time, to the you know, the metric nature of the tune that you don't find in American music. And there are very few people that I've been introduced to over the last 20, 30 years that have played this music with an Eastern European sense. Certainly Leon Schwartz, who left us in 1989 and who recorded that magnificent album, Like in a Different World. Leon Schwartz, the fiddler from the Bukovina, is one of the rare voices where you can get a sense of what Jewish music must have sounded like 100 years ago, 50 years ago. And German as well, the flavor that he gives us is not it's more garlic than what you get in American klezmer music.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Jack. And when the music came here, of course, it continued to develop and be influenced by the musical forms on this side of the Atlantic. And as they would have said on Seinfeld, not that there's anything wrong with that. It's a continuous development of the music. Additionally, the music over there that German played in the 50s and 60s and into the 70s, it wasn't just frozen in time, but it continued to be informed by the developing traditional music over there, as well as some of the music that would make it back over the Atlantic. And I'm just amazed how these tunes bounce back and forth. In fact, I just remembered a number of years ago, I was up at the Festival of American Fiddle Tunes, and there was an elderly fiddler there, a gentleman in his 90s by the name of Juan Reynoso from somewhere deep in Mexico, and he'd play these old Mexican tunes, and he started playing this tune, and it sounded almost identical to one of the tunes I learned from German. And obviously, there was a lot of Central and Eastern European emigration to Mexico. Good tunes get around.
Yep. Let's hear one now. This is from German's album, which is called A Living Tradition, and this is just simply called Wedding Hora. Goldenstein's Wedding Hora. We are celebrating. We're on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, and that's not only required by the FCC, but it's a good idea. My name's Yonkel Falk. I'm here with Marty Morgan Besser in the studio, and we're talking about German Goldenstein and listening to some of his music. He was a clarinetist who taught lots to many of us. And he just left us 10 days ago. And there are a lot of people who are still trying to make sense of this. He went so young. He was just 71 years old. And he was really in the fullness of life. He died while he was standing up there trying to catch a fish. And he just basically went. His spirit left him. His body, you know, his soul left him right then and there. So, you know, as we look for small things to be grateful for, we can be grateful that there was no suffering at the end. He went in the fullness of his life.
Yeah, And that, I think Michael Alpert, who worked very much with him, said that fishing was his second favorite thing after after playing music. So, you know, we all got to go sometime, and of course we want to have as long as we're given, and make the most of those years. And German certainly did. You know, starting out with a very difficult childhood and in the orphanages there, being orphaned during the Holocaust, and then just, you know, not an easy life. And yet, and you hear in the music, in addition to a sense of sadness, there's also this incredible sense of joy in spite of it all. One of the things I wanted to mention, Jack, is, you know, when you listen to his music, I think what really makes it extra special for me, it has this purity to it. There's a phrasing to it.
Yeah.
That, you know, he really, every verse, everything that he's saying, and I use the word saying intentionally, he says it with meaning when he plays. And there's also something about his music. I think Mark Rubin, the tuba player, excellent musician who plays on that CD with him, good friend of ours from Austin, Texas, he said about German something about playing unstuck in time. And what happens is he has this rhythm section that's really keeping a very solid rhythm. We were talking about this track last night, that then German just, there's a soaring quality to it. His, that melody line just soars over the rhythm and sometimes across the bars, across the line on the written page.
When you have a rhythm section that you can count on, when you know that they're going to be in lockstep, you're going to hear the one in the phrase every single time from the rhythm section. As the melody player, you've got just immense freedom to really let, you know, to be expressive with time. German, he emblazons that all across everything he plays.
Yeah, the word for me is that it just soars. The other thing about the way he plays are the tempos are very moderate. It has a lot of energy. It doesn't lag. It doesn't drag. But they're very danceable tempos. And part of that, I guess, a big part is he played the music in its context for weddings, community celebrations where people would dance. And I think what often happens in many types of traditional music, whether it's Jewish music or Irish music or music of whatever ethnicity and roots. When it came to this country, I think people started playing it faster and faster, and there was somehow a disconnect between the dance and the music, and you don't hear that disconnect with German's playing.
I wonder how true that is in terms of live celebrations in this country. I know that it's true certainly in terms of recorded stuff. In prime example, Dave Terrace and Naftali Braunwein, the two clarinetists of the, you know, 1930s, 20s and 30s, who were really in a duel for the loyalty of the Jewish listening public. And in a sense, it was, oh, I can do that. Oh, I can do that. And it was two clarinetists showing their chops off. And part of that is you want to play this stuff as intensely fast as you can play it, because it's exciting as a recording. But what German's doing here, as we've been listening to the last few examples, he's playing it at a dance tempo. And, you know, you're a dancer, I'm not. But I watched Marty dance to this stuff.
Oh, you're a dancer in your heart.
Oh, in my heart. But my heart will move at whatever tempo. Marty's got good feet, and I've seen him lead dance workshops. And this is the key if you're trying to get dancers on the floor, is to not call the cardiac care unit, but to actually put it out at a tempo that people can dance to.
Yeah.
And you hear that in German's playing. There's a loping quality to it. It's alive and it's not frenetic.
Yeah. And it does have incredible intensity to it, and it doesn't need the frenetic tempos. And the other thing, and you made me think about this when you mentioned that competition between Braunwein and Terrace, and, you know, who could play the fastest and put in the most. With German, it isn't about him. There's a selflessness in the way he plays.
Yep.
There's a purity. It's almost as if he is the medium. He's the channel through which this music and the years and centuries of its evolution, it expresses itself. So there's no ego there.
Yep. Time is running short this hour, and I want to make sure we get at least one more in here. So right now, let's listen to the Russian medley. The Russian medley or the tango?
Either or.
Russian medley. Listening to German Goldenstein, and I'm joined here in the studio by Marty Morgan Besser.
Yes, and both Yankel and I learned tunes from German Goldenstein. He shared them with us selflessly. And if you want to hear more of this music, you can get this CD from cdbaby.com, and just go there and search for Goldenstein. That's spelled Goldenstein. CDBaby.com. Good local Portland company. They keep a very small amount of the proceeds. Most of the proceeds from that will go to Goldenstein's family. And of course, since Goldenstein just passed away a few weeks ago, I'm sure that will help them. Immigrant family living in Brooklyn, New York. Also, I want to wish a refuah shlema, a speedy recovery to our good friend Jim Cohen, another clarinet player living in Asheville, North Carolina, and tech writer, and he played in the U.S. Air Force Band, just as German played with the Red Army Band.
I want to thank Marty Morgan Besser for being here with us, and we'll go out with just a little snippet from German's last tune on the album, Tseren Kutsa. Stay tuned for the Persian program, which follows immediately. You're on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland.
Thank you, German.